Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening. It's time for Peach State Pandemonium, and the boys are back in town. The gang's all here. For the first time in a couple of weeks, we're all together. Jerry Oates, Bobby Simmons, and myself, Michael Norris. What's going on, guys?
The first thing I want to get off my chest is this heat. I don't know if it's as hot where you guys are. The heat index today was 105 here, 106.
I don't know what it was here in Atlanta, but it had to be close to that.
Was it smoking there too, Bob?
It's like the parking deck at my office downtown is underneath the building, and stepping into the parking deck is like stepping into a microwave. I mean, it is unbearable.
Oh, it's awful. I think last night it got down to 80. That was the low. How about you, Mike?
It's creeped back up into the mid-90s up here in Long Island. This past weekend, the high was on Saturday was 78, and I think it was 80 or 81 on Sunday, which helped Ron's last two shows in Bayshore, which is where he was. He's now moved to Virginia. He moved there, went there Monday. I talked to him Monday night, checked, make sure he got there okay and everything. But it's slowly creeping back up. And I've got the show there in, they finish up in Greenport tonight, which is Bill Dundee has got them. And then they move to Farmingville, which is on the other end of the island from where I am. And Tom Ernesto's doing those shows through the weekend, and then I have them Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So hopefully the weather's going to cooperate a little bit better for us before we get off the island here, and then the show jumps to New Jersey, and I'm not sure where I'm going yet. Not sure where I'm hoping, regardless of the heat, I'm hoping it's south of Mason-Dixon. I love this area up here, but I'm ready to be closer to home.
I bet.
So at your council meeting last week, were you elected mayor or anything? I mean, you got
they just had to attend. I didn't make any recommendations.
He had to give a coyote update.
Yeah, I heard that.
Oh, that's every day, no matter where I go. Go into a restaurant to eat, or somebody asked me, said, what's the latest on the coyote? I said, well, I got him out there in the van if you want to see him. Really? I'll go sit down somewhere, man. I ain't got the coyote. It's unbelievable.
Well, how are you? I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. How is your recovery going? Well, you okay?
I appreciate you asking, Bobby. Yeah.
Good.
Yep.
Good. And I don't know if I've talked to you since, but my regards in the loss of your brother-in-law. I hope, please pass that along to your lovely bride.
I will tell her. She has really taken it some kind of, I mean, it was just the two of them left, and she's some kind of taking it hard, but she's doing a lot better. And I appreciate you asking about that, both of you, really.
Well, I had a little conversation with my little brother. There's 7 years difference in me and him. We had two older half-brothers that are both gone, and I told him when we put Mom in that nursing home, I had a little heart-to-heart with him, and I told him, I said, Bubba, I said, you realize it's just me and you left, and I said, whatever we do, we got to come out of this still liking each other. So
I know. It's what you had to do, I had to do, and it's a hard thing getting it, Bobby.
Oh, geez. I'm still not
hard.
Over it.
It's very, very hard. I know the day we put my mother in, it was me and my dad and my sister. And for some reason or another, they left me there, the last one there. that woman begged me not to leave it. You think that wasn't brutal? Oh, God.
That's one thing I am so thankful for. My mom was very cooperative, and she understood.
She mentally alert, Bobby? Alert?
Yeah. She has early onset Alzheimer's, and her short-term memory is not great. I mean, she forgets very easily the short-term stuff. She remembers stuff that happened 20 years ago. You know.
50 years ago, yeah. That's amazing how that works, but the way it works.
She was very cooperative. She did. I was so afraid she's going to cry, but she didn't. She was very, I go see her at least once a week, spend a couple hours with her, and so far so good.
Well, that's good.
I give you a funny story. I know people listening probably don't care, but
you'll
like
this. Yeah.
The first 3 days she was there, when she went to dinner on Sunday night, they put a little name tag at the tables. And what they do is they assign you a seat so that you will be at a table for 2 or 3 days, and then you go to the next table, and they move you around so you meet everybody. It's a small-town facility. There's less than 100 patients, and everybody seems to know everybody because it being a small town. Well, Mama told me the first night she was sitting at a table with a lady named Miss Ethel. And Miss Ethel asked my mother, said, "Are you going to eat that piece of pie, Miss Margaret?" And she went, "No, would you like it?" And she went, "Sure," and gave it to her. Said Monday they went to lunch, and said they were sitting there, and they had some other kind of pie. Mama said, "Mama didn't eat a lot of that kind of stuff." And Miss Ethel said, "Miss Margaret, you ate that pie?" "No, you want it?" "Yeah." So they went to dinner Tuesday night or Monday night, and said, "Mama didn't even wait for her to ask." She said, "Miss Ethel, would you like this pie?" "Oh, yes, I'd love it." She took about 2 bites, and this nurse walked up behind her and tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Miss Ethel, you know you're a diabetic. You ain't supposed to have none of them sweets."
Oh, my gosh.
Mama said, my mother said, "It's a wonder I didn't put the lady in a coma."
It's the one thing to put your mom in jail for putting her
in
a diabetic.
Well, I told Mama, I said, "You the new kid on the block. See, she played you. She
That's
knew
right.
you didn't know."
She worked her over, didn't she?
Played her like a violin.
Didn't she? Her senses are still there, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where's your mother? I thought she was in Macon.
She's in Barnesville.
Oh, okay.
My little brother lives in Yatesville, which is between Barnesville and Roberta. And Mama's about 10, 12 minutes from where David's at. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he works very close, so he's by there almost every day.
Yeah, that's good.
But, it was... Mama's done threatened to put some lady in a coma, so I thought that was good.
Yes.
Get kicked out before you get comfortable.
Maybe it's part of the plan, Bobby.
Well, it could be. It could be.
Oh. So if you guys, I know Bobby is, and a big TV nut, especially the old shows from the 60s and 70s. This has been a bad couple of months, hasn't it?
Oh, man, I'm in mourning.
We lost Cooper, and then Andy, and then Mikhail, and then just the last 2 days, George Jefferson and whatever character Chad ever played on Medical Center.
You know, I didn't know he was 75 years old.
I didn't either. I had no clue.
I had no idea. What a handsome man he was. He was very handsome.
And he hasn't done much since, you know, a whole lot. I mean, he's done a couple episodes of fairly recent shows, but once Medical Center went off the air, he kind of dropped out of sight.
Yeah, he did.
It's been a rough couple of months here for classic TV fans. And unfortunately, we lost three from our fraternity this week as well. A couple of them, I don't know that you guys ever crossed paths with them or have even heard of them. They worked pretty much in one area. Goldie Rogers, who's a big name in Canada, he worked in both coasts of Canada, worked on the West Coast in Calgary, and quite a bit on the Atlantic coast as well.
Goldie Rogers, is that the guy Ted teamed up with?
No, that was Rip Rogers.
Rip Rogers, okay.
Rip Rogers, yeah.
Yeah, I saw where this guy passed away. It didn't ring a bell, Mike, with me at all.
61 years old, died of a stroke.
Jeez,
that's something.
And then Eddie Lopez, who was pretty much mainly worked Arizona, Southwest area, was a fairly big name out there in the 60s and 70s, and up until, I guess, the early 80s. And I don't know how old he was. I wasn't able to find much information on him. And then the next one, I just died yesterday, and I had no clue he was even still alive. That's Black Jack Daniels. I'm sure you guys have heard of him. He worked. Yeah, he worked. He was mainly worked in Minnesota in the early '60s up through the '70s. But he came through. He and Stan Kowalski came through Florida and Georgia into the Carolinas in the '60s together as a team. They were brothers-in-law, I guess is how you pronounce it. And but they teamed up quite a bit. And he also teamed with Tiny Mills in Minnesota quite a bit as well.
Oh, I never knew him either.
I saw that today. I don't think I knew him either.
But like I said, I thought that he was long gone. He's one of those that when he just passed away, it's kind of like Bill McCarthy died. I thought he was long gone. Bill McCarthy. This has been about a few months back when he passed away. Al Criswell or Joe McCarthy. I thought he was.
You hear a lot of noise there.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of static on my end tonight.
I actually switched for it, I think, again, because I'm not hearing it. You guys are hearing the noise, and I'm not
very
hearing
loud.
It. I hope it'll work through it.
And on a good note, today's birthday, Tommy Rich's birthday is today. So happy birthday to the wildfire.
And the fire is old.
I have no clue. Ageless. Let's just say that. I have no clue how old he is. And I was remiss and didn't mention last week, and I'll make up for it this week. Last Thursday was Robert Gibson and Randy Rhoads' birthday. So belated happy birthday to the two of them.
I saw something. I read somewhere where it was Randy Rhoads' birthday. The first time I ever met Randy, I had walked out of the office at the sports arena, and I was walking down through the arena to go to the back to look for Red or to do something back there. And as I'm walking down, I heard somebody grunting. I thought, what is that? I walked up into the arena there, and there was some furniture pads spread on the floor. And Bob Orton Jr. had some guy tied in a knot, and he had his butt up in the air, and his foot was straight up in the air, and his head was tucked under his, you know, like almost doubled over. And I walked up, and Bob went, "Oh, hey, Bobby." He said, "Say hello." He said, "It's Randy Alls here," which is, as Randy says, he died. But Randy Rose said, "Say hello to him." I said, "Hello," and he went, "Hello." But Orton had him tied in a knot.
That was your first meeting of
that
all.
That was the first time I met him.
Boy.
Oh, they used to have some wonderful workout sessions over there. Well, some of them I'd start watching, and I knew what was going to happen. I'd walk off because I didn't want to be a witness.
You should have seen those down there in Tampa.
Oh, I've heard.
Oh, Bobby, it's true. I don't know what you've heard, but it's true. Tell me, man. Oh, man. It was a meat grinder, man.
I heard the only thing I ever heard that kind of bothered me. They said Graham would Sunday punch him after somebody had stretched him. Now I
heard that. Well, I'm gonna tell you what. The first time I ever did TV in Tampa, or any TV ever, I pulled up in the parking lot. There's some guy there bleeding. I thought I didn't know. I thought he'd been in a wreck. He'd been in there working.
Jeez.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. Root would blow him up and then. But anyhow, that's another story.
We would, on Monday, when I first went to work, when I left, when Gunkel shut down and I went to work over there, the very first day I'm over there.
He was going to do that to you, you know.
Well, it did cross my mind. I walked in, and Barnett introduced me to Harley, who was the booker. and we talked a while, and we talked about some different things. And Harley, you know, Mr. Ward didn't want to use me. I was quote-unquote opposition.
Right.
So that was okay, you know. I mean, it didn't matter that Fred ran opposition to Paul Jones in the 50s, but that was another story. But anyway, I said, okay, I said, that's fine. I said, I don't mind, you know. I said, you just tell me what you want me to do, you know. So he said, well, we're going to, he sent me, I went to, my first night I went to Waycross. I was broke in right. So he said, come on, let's go downstairs and watch them work out. Well, okay. So we walk downstairs, and me and him are sitting there talking, and I'm watching this kid in the ring. Orton Jr., Steve Kern, Ricky Gibson, somebody else. There were three or four of them in the ring, and this kid was there, and the kid could wrestle. And none of these guys, now you know how good Orton was,
right.
They could not get this kid off his feet.
You kidding me?
This kid would, I mean, he would just, you know, they'd go for double, boom, 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 he kept dropping out. Well, you remember Donnie Payne, the guy that used to carry the ring jackets in Atlanta? He'd
yes.
look at you sideways.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that was his nickname. That's what we called him, was sideways. But anyway, Donnie was there. And they was just aggravating him, and they said, you know, Donnie had more wrestling outfits than the wrestlers did. You know, he wore them when he seconded. But anyway, they told Donnie, they said, why don't you get up here and give it a try? Well, okay. So Donnie got up there. Donnie gave him that little sideways look. And it's the funniest thing you ever seen. He dove at him like he was going to football tackle him and grabbed his ankles and took that kid right off his feet.
He did not.
So the rest of them got hot now, see. Oh, get out of here, get out of here. Well, Harley got hot, too. Harley got in the ring with the guy. Oh, it was nasty. There wasn't a lot of wrestling.
No, sir.
And I got up because you're exactly right. I thought, they're going to want me to work out bed. I ain't going to be here.
See you later. I had fun, but I got to run.
Yeah, I got to go to Waycross. But that was, it was some pretty nasty stuff went on over there.
Well, that's a good segue into what we're going to be discussing tonight. Speaking of Harley race, we're going to look more in depth. We kind of touched on it a couple weeks ago on the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, when it was the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And we at some point are going to be joined, I don't know when or for how long, but a gentleman by the name of Michael Elliott, who is with Elbow Room Productions, which has just released a new DVD called History and Tradition, the Story of the National Wrestling Alliance, which takes a look basically at the history of the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. So I thought it'd be a good show to ask Michael to join us. Unfortunately, he works at night. He works in a recording studio or television studio. So he's going to try and cut out some time and give us a call in and talk to us a little bit about his new DVD and everything. So let's, what I'll do is take a break real quick and pay some bills, and then when we come back, we'll start our discussion on the World Championship.
Sounds good. Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
During the break, I kept hearing this noise outside. I got up and looked down. It's storming here. I just looked at the weather real quick. It's going for a chance of hail and winds here. So if we lose me, we'll know what happened.
I hope you'll be all right, sir.
Oh, yeah.
You may get back south of Mason-Dixon line quicker than you want to.
Well, at least you got rid of that status.
Yeah, it's better now.
I know we all have to die at some point, but Lord,
oh,
please,
there it
Lord,
comes again.
New York.
Oh, I spoke too soon, didn't I?
Yeah.
I'm still not hearing it. Is it just static sounding?
Yeah.
Is it a bell tone or what?
I have no clue. I have no clue. Oh, well, I may have to, if it's my phone, I may have to resign. You guys have to get
Did anybody see on Facebook the picture that Mike Mooneyham posted?
Yes.
Wasn't that funny?
They
had a picture of Les on there from probably in the 60s with a look like a leisure suit with them big wide lapels and had that long hair. And somebody said, I forget what it said, but anyway, I put the comment on there. I said, he'll be appearing at the lounge at the Holiday Inn over the weekend.
I put on there, it was a good thing he never got close to an open flame because of all that polyester he'd have gone up like a candle.
Oh. Sadly, that could be said for all of us, I guess, during that time frame.
Oh, please. I got pictures of it with anybody.
I never owned a leisure suit.
I didn't own a leisure suit, but I owned some of those shirts with big lapels. I wouldn't show anybody those pictures.
How about with the big bell sleeves? Remember those, the big puppy sleeves?
And some of them, too.
And the britches.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, in starting our look at the NWA World Championship, you guys, obviously, as I was, you were fans before you got into the business. Who's the first world champion you guys ever remember seeing?
Thez for me.
I think me too, Bobby.
Was the, and I'm sure it was, of course, Atlanta, you guys growing up around Atlanta and the Georgia area, you guys got the world champion a whole lot more than the territory that I grew up watching. It was built up as a big deal when the world champion came to town, was it not?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Jerry.
It was just a big deal. I mean, you call it the world champions coming to Columbus, Georgia. I mean, you know, it was like, whoa.
Yeah, and you know, back then there was no cable TV, so all you saw was your local show, so you didn't have to, you know, I mean, I mean, I bought wrestling magazines and I read them, but, you know, these guys that I would see from other places, you know, they were like foreigners to me. I mean, I was so into what was going on in Atlanta that I just, that was what was real to me. And because you couldn't see other TVs, that world championship meant something.
But you, the only good thing about those magazines, Bobby, I remember the first time Wrestling Review, that was the best one of all
yeah.
of me. And I used to see stuff about Tarzan Tyler. When I found out he was coming to Georgia, man, I had a, man, I've seen him in a magazine. You know, that,
yeah.
that was like, whoa, it was like a movie star coming, you know. I thought, you know, that was impressive to me as a kid.
It's funny you mentioned him. I was thinking about him the other day. I got a picture or something here somewhere with me refereeing a match with him. Wasn't him, I mean, he looked like a monster.
Didn't he?
Oh, jeez. Nice guy, but God, I mean, he looked like he'd kill you.
He looked the part, didn't he?
Yes,
he
did.
He was a nice man, very nice.
I know he had the best tan outside of Buddy Rogers I ever saw.
How he did that back then without tanning beds, I don't know. I mean, you stop and think about it now. I don't know how he did it.
I don't know. Well, the first world champion I saw was Dory Jr. And see, I had no clue that there even was a world champion. I'd never, you know. I thought, you know, I didn't know they were wrestling outside of the Gulf Coast territory because I had not started discovered wrestling magazines. And it wasn't until a few months after Dory came. And I thought, you know, they kept saying that the world champion's coming. I'm thinking, this guy's got to be huge, you know, this big muscle-bound monster or something. And then they showed a clip on television. It was an interview clip, and it was Dory Senior and Junior and Terry all together, and they were talking. And there's Dory standing there with the world championship, and as good a worker as Dory was, and as good a wrestler he was, he did not look like, you know, that athletic, and he always looked older than he was, because, you know, this was in '71. Dory was probably in his mid 20s, maybe late 20s at that point. And he just looked so old because, you know, he was going bald already. And but when I saw him work, he worked an hour Broadway with Don Fargo. And I was very impressed with him. And, of course, I saw Jack Briscoe several times. Saw Terry, wrestle Eddie Sullivan, and Ken Lucas. And then, of course, since I've gotten older and discovered videotape and DVDs. I've gone back and seen champions like Fez and O'Connor and Buddy Rogers and people like that. And it's just, you know, the whole atmosphere is just totally different in a world championship match to me. Have you guys seen the title change between Pat O'Connor and Buddy Rogers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a great match. What a great match. It's just, you know, and to draw that many people in Comiskey Park the way they did.
What was that, 1962?
62, yeah. No, wait a minute. Was it? Yeah, 62.
O'Connor told me he got 10 grand for that.
Who did?
Pat.
Well, I'm sure.
That's a lot
yeah,
of money
sure.
today, but that was really a lot of money in
1962. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Then?
Jeez.
I guess that was the biggest house ever at that time, wasn't it?
Yeah, at that time, I'm sure it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's still probably in the top 20 for an outdoor show like that.
You know, you were talking about Dory when you saw him on the interview. I'd be interested for Jerry's opinion of this too, but to me, Luthez was the epitome of what our business should have been. He carried himself as a champion. He acted like a champion. He always dressed the part. He always was very articulate, and not to mention he was tough as nails. But next to him, I thought Dory Jr. carried that belt as well as anybody.
Yeah, I was going to say that he always had on like a sport coat and a tie. He always was like, you know, that's what you pictured. And I guess I'm sure he looked up the Fez. I'm sure he did. You know.
Well, you know, at the time, it was just a different time back then. I mean, I'm not saying the guys today don't respect the business. They do in their own way, I guess. But back then, I would never, I mean, and of course, I wasn't in the business then. It was later on. But even when I got in, I would have never thought of going to the matches in a pair of flip-flops and a pair of shorts.
Well, Bobby, when I first started, had to wear a coat and tie to the auditorium on Friday nights. You
Why
probably
not?
Don't remember that.
Not that we were better than anybody, but we were supposed to act like we were.
Professional athletes.
You know.
You know, that's why I love the Yankees, because I grew up watching. I'm getting off on something else, but it relates to what we did. That's why I love the Yankees. They don't have no facial hair. They don't look like they've lost their electric razor.
Yeah.
They have nice haircuts. I mean, that Steinbrenner ran it like what it was. I know I saw an interview that he did. He said, first of all, you're a New York Yankee, and you're going to look like one. And some of these guys, they look like they just got out of bed. I mean, I wouldn't run a team like that. I mean, personally, I wouldn't. They'd have to look like what they are. You're representing an organization, and that was the only town we wore coats and ties was to the auditorium, but not, you know, not the other towns. But no, I never wore flip-flops or...
No.
Of course, I know it's a different time. I mean, in Florida they did, which that was understandable.
Yeah.
They'd wear shorts and... Because a lot of those guys down there on vacation in the summertime anyhow, you know, come from other territories for vacations. But, yeah, Dory did. He carried himself excellent, I thought.
Yeah, I just... That was...
He always had that presence, and Briscoe did, too.
Yes, he did.
Briscoe just... You could look at Briscoe. I think if you saw Jack Briscoe walking down the street, you weren't a wrestling fan, you had no clue as to who Jack Briscoe was, you could see him walking down the street and know he was somebody. He just had a presence about him.
He had a presence, he did.
And he looked like an athlete. Not saying that Dory didn't, but Dory was a different style, but Jack just the way he walked and everything else, you could just tell he was a boys athlete.
Well, those guys earned their money. You know, the NWA bylaws stated that the champion was supposed to get 10% of the 10% of the net, which is gross less sales tax. That's what they were supposed to make every night. And a lot of times they didn't. But
I was going to ask you, how many times do you think they got gypped, Bobby?
Well, I would say a lot. You know, if the town didn't draw or the territory was down, I mean, I know for a fact, because the deal was they were supposed to pay the champion 10%, and that's why a lot of bookers didn't want the champion there, because it took money away from the other talent if they were paid properly. And not only did you have to pay the champion 10%, you were supposed to send 3% to the NWA. So that was part of my job working for Barnett, because Barnett booked the champion. And there was a couple of times I had to call promoters and say, hey, we didn't get a check. And, of course, I was the one to always take the heat, because they'd want to scream and yell at me if the territory was down and didn't make no money. And, you know, but I was buffering for Barnett then. But, you know, that's what they were supposed to do. You were talking about 10 grand. That's the biggest check I ever wrote anybody. And I want to say it was Flair. I wrote a check for 10 grand for him for Atlanta one time, for the Omni in Atlanta. I think that's who it was. I may be wrong, but I believe that's what it was. I know I wrote one check. But
you know, promoters not wanting to bring the champion in, you know, we're talking about their fans.
Yeah.
It makes their talent look better. So what, you're paying 10% and 3% to NWA. So what? You know, I know you said Ole despised bringing the champion in, but if he was the champion, he'd want to be booked.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the way I look at it. You know, I mean.
Yeah. And you would, you know, the thing about the champion was you were only going to get him. You were only going to get him maybe, you might get him three times a year.
Mike, there you go.
Now, some of the bigger territories, you know, would get him more often because they wanted him. You know, when Harley was the champion, Jim tried to book him in Kansas City for 3 or 4 weeks out of the year because that put him at home.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, these guys, you know, back in the day, we're talking Dez and we're talking right up through Harley, right up through Flair. I mean, these guys were working, anywhere from 48 to 50 weeks a year. And they got very little time off. And what time they were off, they were traveling. So it was a...
But you know, back when Junior and Fez and even Harley, you know, they were going to Australia, they were going
yes,
to
sir.
New Zealand,
yes,
to
sir.
Japan, they were going everywhere.
Yes,
Puerto
sir.
Rico, you know, everywhere.
Anywhere there was an NWA office, they were going.
Did they do a lot in Canada, Bobby?
They would work,
yeah.
Well, Toronto was being run out of the New York office, so they didn't go
yeah.
to Toronto a lot, but they would go to Calgary periodically. And if I'm not mistaken, they'd go up to Vancouver every once in a while. But, I mean, it was, you know, I mean, it got to the point where the guy, they were trying to promise the champion to work 4 weeks and take a week off. Or, you know, they were trying to do that. But what would happen, you'd work the guy 4 weeks, you'd give him a week off, and somebody would call and go, hey, I got this big show. You know, can you come work this or can you come do this? And most of them would finally give in. But I can remember to get Harley to come to Atlanta on Christmas sometimes, we would book a suite at one of the hotels in Atlanta. And there was a hotel here in Atlanta, and I can't remember which one it was, but it had a couple of rooms that had a swimming pool in the room. And we would rent that room for him so he'd fly his wife in with him. Just to get him, you know, so that he would come.
But you know, Harley lived in the perfect place to be the champion.
Yeah, right in the middle of the country.
You got that right.
Yeah.
When he was home, though.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we got a caller, and it's not Michael Elliott, but it's somebody that we haven't talked to in a while. And I know he wrestled Dory Jr. because I've got pictures of it that he gave me, so I'm going to get him on the line with us. Good evening, Joe Turner.
How y'all doing?
Good.
All right, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Before we go too far, have you talked to Mr. Bowman?
No, I haven't.
Well, we know what's going on with him, why he doesn't have a phone right now, and I thought maybe you'd had a chance to go over and check on him.
No, I hadn't had time to go over there. I heard y'all talking about the champions, and I was going to tell you a couple little funny stories that happened. They had that Lou Thales was in a six-man tag in Chattanooga one time with the Hans brothers. They walked... You know, Billy Hines always pulling jokes. Well, anyway, they said, Lou, why don't you go ahead and start since you've been on the road so much, tired, and we'll take over. Lou said, okay. Well, Billy told his partner, he said, look, when it goes tag, let's walk off. So they kept walking off and Lou kept going for the tag. So finally, Lou just stopped the match, walked over there and grabbed Billy Hines and drug him to the other corner where he belonged. And hell, he'd been tagged as hell.
I don't think that's anybody I would have pulled a rail on with.
Oh, I know I wouldn't have.
Yeah. And another thing, too, is I forgot who was working with Lou, and he's losing his hair. And the guy, he told him, he said, don't grab him by the top of the hair. The guy grabbed him by the top of the hair, and Lou reached up and grabbed his hand, pulled it loose, and put it on the side. And I tell you one about, excuse me, I don't know why I'm coughing so much, but Funk, when he was champion, he was in Nashville. And back then, Bill and I wore Western stuff, cowboy boots and jeans and cowboy hat and all. And so he come over there and asked me, over my room, he says, Joe says, where do you get your Western stuff? I said, that Western store right over by the Grand Ole Opry. We were staying in Sam Davis. And he says, have you got time to go over with me and show me where it's at? And I said, yeah, you want me to go get the car? And he said, no, how far is it? And I told him it wasn't very far. He said, let's just walk. And what he was looking for was some white cowboy boots for men. Well, back in those years, guys didn't wear white cowboy boots. And because they would accuse him of being gay. So anyway, I said, well, you go wear them white boots? So yeah, I says, they're making them for men now. So we walked over there, and he found a pair of white boots. The guy had them. He tried them on. They fit just right. So Funk says, yeah, I'll take these. The guys will take them off, and I'll box them up. He said, no, just box my old ones up. He said, I'll wear these back to the hotel. So we were walking down the street, and when we were going down the street, there was guys hanging out the car windows and truck windows, hollering all kind of insults to him about being gay and all that. So we got back to the hotel, and he put his old boots back on, and I saw him about, 6 months later. Is he still wearing them white cowboy boots? He said, no, I took them home, took them off, hadn't ever put them back on. that match I had with him in Atlanta was a fantastic match, I thought, you know, because he's just so smooth. And I enjoyed working with him.
You wrestled Jim Jerry.
What now?
You wrestled Junior, didn't you?
In Japan.
Was he still champion then?
No. Oh, he was unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. I've done a few holds. I've done a few holds on him. I didn't even know how to do. I ended up with him. That's how good he was.
I mean, I was in awe of him, of his work. I really was. I was just in awe of him. To me, he was the epitome of what we did.
It's so strange that he and Terry had such different styles.
Oh, my God.
Both of them have been trained by the old man. From what I've seen a little bit of video of the old man, and Terry's more like Glory Senior was, because Glory Senior was known as a brawler. He was so famous for the Texas Death Matches and everything, but it's so odd that, not to say that Terry couldn't work smooth, because Terry could when he wanted to, it's just when he wanted to.
Did any of y'all work with Briscoe?
Oh, yeah.
I worked with him on High Point TV. And, you know, that joker can move. I mean, fast.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I got out there and that match, it seemed like it went 30 minutes, but it only went about 7-8 minutes. And I'm moving so fast, I didn't even know where I was at. We got back to the dressing room, we walked in, and he said, hey, Turner, that's a hell of a match, man. That was great. I said, what'd we do? I'm going so fast, I couldn't even keep up what we were doing. He had me flying all over that ring.
He's something else.
I pulled a rib on him one time when he dropped the belt. We was in the town, and he come walking out of the dressing room. I was looking to see how the crowd was. He walked up to me and said, how you doing, Turner? I said, doing all right. And I said, Jack, I heard you dropped the belt. He said, yeah, I did. I said, well, that's a shame. He said, why is it a shame, Turner? And I says, you finally got over, and they take the belt away from you. I ain't going to tell you what he said when he walked off.
You better be glad he walked off.
Yeah. Oh, I picked at him a lot anyhow. His brother, man, we was all good friends. Bill and I was married to his brother almost. We wrestled him and Sandy Scott just about every week. I thought a lot of them Briscoes.
Jerry, I remember Ted telling me one time he worked with Briscoe. It was a title match somewhere out there in Kansas City. And he said he had a headlock on Jack. He said, but Jack blew him up with him holding the headlock. He said, because Jack would get up behind him and bend him over double.
Oh, he would. He was the man.
Yeah, I think overall we all had some pretty good champions over the years back in our days.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Flair was still, I guess you would consider him the last real NWA champion that actually traveled from territory to territory when there were still that many territories. And he did travel overseas. He made quite a few defenses in Japan and in Australia. We all know about, because of we focus on Georgia so much, Tommy Rich's short term as NWA champion. Of course, Dusty had a couple quick turns, and then they did the ones with Baba in Japan. Do you think that hurt the championship more than anything, or helped it?
Which, on what now?
On any of them, doing those quick changes like that.
Well, in Japan, the people back then really didn't know it. You know, when they dropped it to Baba.
Right.
I think when Jack did it, it was never recognized, was it?
When it was dropped to Baba, Muchnick didn't even know about it.
No, that was all brokered by Terry Funk and Jack Briscoe.
Yeah.
Well, they officially recognized it because Sam eventually got his piece of it. I don't know who ended up paying him, but he did. Muchnick did get his 3% after the deal was done. So they officially recognized it. I mean, they had, you know, magazine articles on it and everything else.
I think Jack told me, or I seen Jack or heard Jack talking about it. I think they gave him $10,000 to drop it to him on a Monday. And the deal was they was going to give it back to him on Friday or Saturday. And Jack said, I knew if he didn't give it back, I would be able to take it back, is the way he worded it. So, but I think he got $10,000 for letting him wear that belt for a week.
Well, O'Connor told me he was over there carrying the money.
He was. He was one of Jack's seconds. That was another thing that, and what Bobby was talking about, I've got the match where he dropped it on videotape. And Jack said it was also funny, or very funny, that the Japanese allowed him to videotape him Bubba winning. They never taped Jack winning it back. But he had Pat O'Connor and Ken Mantell were his seconds in that match, so he was well covered. If for any reason he wasn't able to take it back, somebody would have. He had two pretty capable guys with him that handled themselves. But the Rich thing, and of course, you know, everybody's talked about the rumors about the reason behind that. But I know Bobby's talked about it several times on here because he was part of the office and he knew about what was going on. But how do you think that did that help or hurt Tommy's career, Bobby, in your opinion? Like winning it, losing it that quick.
Well, I don't think it hurt it. Let me put it this way. It should have helped it. He didn't know how to handle it.
It didn't do what they thought it was going to do for him.
No. It was. How do I say this and be polite? Me and Tommy have never had a cross word, okay? It was too unbelievable to conceive that Tommy Rich could beat Harley Race. That's my opinion.
I'll buy that.
Tommy was a good-looking kid. He was over with the girls. You know, the young girls loved him. The old grandmas loved him. But, like you said, he didn't look. He did not have an athletic body. He was. I don't know. He didn't look the part of a champion. And I just don't, I don't think the people bought it like they thought he was going to, or they were going to. Because it was done just to boost his prowess here in Georgia.
Right.
Well, Billy Graham got beat by him in Columbus, Georgia. The people didn't believe that.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. See, I always was under the impression that it kind of helped both Tommy and with the championship because it made it more like real sports, is that anybody could be beaten at any time. Now, what you said is true as far as him being a long-term champion. I don't think
No.
He was unbelievable all the time.
He was never seen with a belt on TV, okay, other than the films of the match. He never got to Atlanta TV with a belt. By the time he got to Atlanta TV, it was over with. It was done. He won the belt in Augusta, which was a good-sized town, but he dropped it in the Gainesville Civic Center, which seated about 1,200 people if it was sold out, and I don't know that it was sold out that Friday night. So, you know, they had the best intentions in the world to boost his career and to help him. I don't think the people bought it like he thought he would. Number two, I don't think he knew how to handle it.
Long term, I don't think he could have done anything. What about, and of course, Dusty had more later on getting into the Crockett and WCW years, but what about Dusty's two terms in 79 and 81 when he won? Because those were both short. And to me, just my opinion, I don't think Dusty needed the world championship. He was better.
He did.
Facing the champion because he was already so over. He was already such a big thing.
But he didn't need.
I was excited. Did we lose anybody here? It got quiet.
No, no. We're here. And I guess the Kerry Von Erich deal was there again. And Bobby, I all the years I've known you, I've never asked you this. You knew the inner workings of Barnett, and said Barnett booked the champion. You know, you hear so much talk about David Von Erich was promised the world championship, was, you know, that was going to happen, and that when he died over in Japan, the giving Kerry the championship was more or less payback to Fritz because David never got it or whatever. Was there ever any, or did they even discuss stuff like that?
I never heard it. I heard the rumors like everybody else about David, and out of all the kids that Jack had, David would have probably been the best one to carry that title. He probably could have pulled it off.
Right.
But there again, I think he was too young.
He didn't look the part either, Bobby.
Yeah, he was, you know.
He just didn't look the part.
I think one thing, and you know, Jerry's hitting on it right there, I think one thing about that world title, a lot of it was how you carried yourself. I mean, you were representing the industry, and you were representing the National Wrestling Alliance, and it was, I mean, you had to look, not only did you have to know how to wrestle, you had to look the part. And, the name Ted DiBiase got through around a lot. Ted DiBiase would have been a wonderful champion, I think. Nick Bockwinkel would have been a wonderful champion. And I've heard Nick talk about this. They approached Nick. Evidently, somebody did. And Nick sat down and figured out with the travel and the money he made and the expense and the traveling and what he was making up there in Minneapolis, he decided he could make more money and stay home and not have to do them hour Broadways five nights a week.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, of all the matches, Bobby, that you refereed, I know you refereed several world title matches. Is there any one in particular that sticks out the best?
Any of the Briscoe Funks.
Really?
You can pick any of them. The only wrestling picture I have hanging in my house is the center of a program that had four shots of a Briscoe Funk match with me raising Jack's hand. That's the only wrestling picture hanging in my house. It was just without a doubt. Let me give you another perspective on a world title match. I know Jerry's worked with champions and Joe has. I never wrestled any of them, but I refereed a lot of their matches. My biggest fear was the champion would screw up and I'd have to switch the title. Because it took one mistake and then you had a problem.
Anything go wrong.
Yeah, you never knew. And, if something went wrong, you know where the heat was going to go.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, I never had any issues at all. But you see it a lot more now than you did then. I don't remember it happening a lot back in the 60s and 70s. But, the referee will go down to count a guy, 1, 2, and you come down for that third count. And, they'll let you get with just in millimeters of the mat, and they'll kick out. I don't remember a lot of that back then. Normally you'd get a 1 or 2 count and they'd kick out or they'd put their foot on the rope. But
I never believed in middling a referee like that.
Yeah, that's just – I was thinking today when Mike sent the email and told us what he was going to do and he said about refereeing. I think I've told you all this before, but it wasn't a world title match, but it was just a Georgia junior heavyweight match with Al Valesco and – I think it was Bearcat Wilkerson in Columbus working in that old boxing ring. And the ropes were, they were short, but they were compressed. And the bottom rope was, 2.5 feet off the canvas? It was way up there. And the champ was the champion. And they did a little spot, and Wilkerson covered him. And I went down to count, and I went 1, 2, and I seen Al take his foot and go to put it on that rope, and he missed the rope, and his foot fell back in the ring. And I went 3. And Wilkerson looked at me. And Al looked at me. And I turned around looking for Tom. Because I figured I was in trouble. But I had no choice. And, of course, we got in the dressing room. Valesco and Tom started talking in Spanish. And I had no clue what they were saying. I was just sitting there waiting on the roof to cave in. And finally, they called me back in the shower, and Tom said, "You did all you had no choice. You did exactly what you were supposed to do." But you take that on that level, and you think about a world championship match, man. That was my biggest fear. I was going to get in the way. I was going to screw something up, or somebody wasn't going to kick out or do something they're supposed to do.
And that Al Valesco was a pretty tough character.
Yes, he was.
He was in Lafayette, Louisiana one night, and him buttered around a little bit. But he was coming out of the ring, and a fan jumped on him. He hit that sucker, and they had to take him to the hospital, and he was out for almost 6 hours. The police held Al there until he'd come to. So that's quite a punch, buddy.
I'm telling you.
Jerry, I know I've asked you this before, and you've wrestled a lot of world champions. Is there any one particular one that you enjoyed working with the most?
I enjoy the ones with Jack. I worked with him. He was the first world champion I ever worked with. He did an hour. And the second time I worked with him, he had been in Oregon. And took him all day to get to Des Moines. So, Geico wanted us to do an hour. So he didn't get there till about at 9 o'clock. He was worn out. Geico told him what he wanted. He said, I can do something better than that. He said, I'm worn out. So he said, we'll do about 30 minutes. And he said, there, it was time to go. He said, "You suplex me parallel to the ropes," and he says, "You cover me." The referee's gonna go 1, 2, 3. He looked at the referee, who was Frank Diamond. He says, "My foot is gonna go in that rope 2.5." He said, "Do not stop the count." 1, 2, 3. You look up and see my foot. He said, Jerry, you go get the belt, run around the ring, holding it above your head. I'm going to push you in it and give you no Connor roll up. You still holding the belt. Then people went berserk when he rolled me up. He beat him, he beat him. And he told that referee, he said, don't worry, my foot will be there. That was a fun match. But I enjoyed working with Harley. I worked with him many times when he was a champion. I really enjoyed working with him.
And there again, that you've got two different styles as far as the way Jack worked versus the way Harley worked, two different body types. Which one of these do you think has the most stamina?
Well, that's hard to say. I'd say they were equal.
Yeah, they could both go.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'll tell you what kind of businessman Harley was. I was a North American champion out there for what? So we get there to 3-4. Yeah, I think I told y'all this story, but I'll tell it again. We was going to do TV, and so what? They said, Watts will see you in the back. And I said, okay. And Harley was in there. And he's a world champion. I'm North American champion. And Watts says, Will, I want you to get, you know, put him over. I said, sure, ain't no problem. So Harley told Watts, he said, let me see you outside a minute. They come back in, he said, Harley wants to put you over on TV. He's a world champion. And he did. And I thought that was unbelievable. And then, of course, when he came back around, we sold the places out. New Orleans, Tulsa, Shreveport, everywhere. I had beaten him. And it was on the big show.
Planted the seed that you could beat him.
That's it.
Yes, sir.
Right. That's what kind of businessman he was. But I really enjoyed working with him. He was just enjoyed every match I had with him.
Well, Harley was so deliberate in the way he worked. He was a pound and ground type guy.
He never got in a hurry. You know, it was his pace, not your pace, which is okay. You know, that suited me.
Most people trying to watch it today would find that boring, but to me it was compelling because he worked at such a pace. He always left a spot where the baby face could do a comeback. You know, he always left it like that and everything to keep the match going and everything. And I watched him work with Andre the Giant in Mobile, and people talking about Hogan being the first one to slam the Giant. Not only did Harley slam him in that match, he suplexed him in that match.
But like Joe was talking about earlier, now when you worked with Jack, it was a faster pace.
Yes.
A lot faster than with Harley, which, you know, it's two different people, two different styles, you know. That's understandable.
And then Dory was probably a mixture of both.
Exactly.
The quick moving stuff, but he was also very slow. He could slow it down and be deliberate like Harley was. And not trying to knock Ric Flair, but I think we all know that once you've seen one Ric Flair match, you've seen them all. Whereas his matches went from being, I mean, he still put over the local babyface or whatever whenever he was still a traveling champion, but they worked his style of match and his spots were worked into it. Whereas with the other champions, from what I always saw of them, you know, they worked to the strengths of who their opponent was. It was more about putting their opponent over than you know, get my spot in, like player turnout.
Yeah, because they really, those guys didn't have set spots, you know, like he did, you know.
Right.
Turnbuckle, go upside down, go down the apron, clothesline. You know, I mean, he was going to do that in every match. And,
yep.
And which it was a pretty move to do it anyhow. No need to talk about that. Everybody knows.
But the other guys just seemed to me like they could adapt better than he could.
Exactly. To me,
I guess in a way he was more or less a more modern version of what Buddy Rogers was, even though he didn't have, in my opinion, he couldn't work a match as well as Buddy Rogers.
No.
And I've not seen a whole lot of Rogers except, you know, what I've seen on videotape. But you know, Flair did, he had a way of carrying himself. I mean, he was always immaculate, too, always carried himself well. Always, you know, in fact, I would say he probably took it to the extreme.
When people see Ric Flair.
Yeah.
When people see Flair, they go, wow, there's Ric Flair.
Yeah.
When Buddy Rogers walked into a room, he commanded the room just by his presence. It was.
Of course, I never worked with him, but, you know, when I got in the business, there were still a lot of guys in the business that had worked with him.
Yeah.
They could say a lot of things about him, but they never knocked his work.
No, I met him. I never got in a ring with him, but I've seen enough of him. And even when he was retired, he commanded the room when he walked in the room. He had that natural. Well, Jerry Graham was the same way. There was something about those people that had a natural charisma about them that they. I mean, Jerry Graham could walk in a room and not open his mouth, and people want to kill him. You know, Joe can attest to that.
But
there was just something about him, and it's the same thing with Rogers. You know, it was just the way he carried himself.
Well, that's that old saying: he had it, whatever it is.
Whatever it was, yes, sir.
Yeah, I heard that.
Thinking about Rogers, at least from the interviews and promos I've seen him cut, he didn't talk like a heel. He didn't, you know, he was somewhat braggadocious, but he was always, you know, fairly soft-spoken and everything. He just talked like, you know, kind of Bockwinkel was the same way. Very intelligent, very straight to the point, you know, no yelling, no screaming. But he just exuded that arrogance that made you hate him no matter what he said. He could have been singing Happy Birthday, and you're still hate him. And Bockwinkel, when you know, he decided to turn heel, he was very much the same way. I think as far as all the Nature Boys that came along, Bockwinkel was the closest to Buddy Rogers from anybody I ever saw. From those that tried to pattern themselves after Rogers, Bockwinkel was the closest, and he wasn't even trying.
And see, those guys didn't scream and holler and make idiots out of themselves.
Jody Hamilton, Tom Ernesto.
Never
heard him raise their voice.
He was the Tom Ernesto was the best interviewer I ever heard.
And you believed every word he said.
I used to get, I'd be in the dressing room listening to him get hot listening to him.
Oh yeah.
He's a good river too.
Well, there was a reason we called him Old Silver Tongue.
They called him that for nothing. He was the best interviewer. He sounded like a lawyer up there, you know, explaining why this happened. And I know he used to tell Gordon Solie, but that tape has been doctored and this and this. And, I mean, he was unbelievable. And I got to thinking, well, maybe they did doctor the tape. He was good, wasn't he, Bobby?
Yes, sir. He just, the greatest Ernesto moment I ever was witness to was when he took his hood off on Atlanta TV, and nobody knew he was going to do it. Jody was in Japan, and he called Jody and told Jody. Jody knew about it, but I've heard them both talk about it. But Ernesto went out on that interview with Capital, and he said, people have been talking about my family, and they've been talking about this and that, and he reached up, he snatched that hood off, and Capital liked to drop the microphone. He put them glasses on. He said, my name's Thomas Anthony Ernesto. If you got anything to say, you can come say it to my face now. And he walked off.
Is Capital still alive?
No, he died. He's been dead about, he'd been dead about 10 years, I think, Joe. He was living in Panama City.
Was he really, Bobby?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I knew he'd passed away.
Yeah, he was down there. Ray McKay, the guy that did wrestling in Atlanta before he did, he died. He was in Panama City as well. They had retired down there.
I stayed at his motel before. Ray had a motel there in Panama City.
Yeah. Skipper Ray McKay.
Yeah, did do you remember, did I ever tell you all about the deal in the dressing room at Atlanta TV and Cap will come in there and he hollers, shuts the door. And everybody says, what's the matter? What's the matter? He says, just shut the door. The guy sitting by the door reached over there and shut the door. He said, what's going on? Spears was sitting over with no clothes on. He says, somebody stole Spears' private parts.
That's cold blooded there.
I know it. It's almost true, though. Oh, Billy Spears, where's he at?
We don't know.
Yeah, somebody said he lives in Florida, but I don't know. That's
I've
where
heard
he Jacksonville,
I've heard Pensacola, but I don't know. I don't know.
You hadn't run him down yet, Mike.
It's hard for me to run anybody down up here in New York. If he's on Long Island, though, I'm.
You could run the devil down. Don't hand me that.
No, I have not been able to find out anybody even knows for sure where he is. I think
you mean Luke? You mean Lucas? Or I thought Joe would know where he is. Or
Bill said he's in Pensacola.
Yeah, I've heard that, but then I heard Jacksonville too. So I don't know.
When was the last time you, Joe, you saw him?
Well, I haven't seen him in years. Now, he did go by and stop by and visit Ken Lucas 4 or 5 years ago. And because Ken told me, he said, you wouldn't recognize him. I said, I don't recognize a lot of these old men.
How's Tony Charles doing?
I have no clue. Probably about just like he was the last I heard. You know about all that, don't you? I think he has a little dementia.
Yeah.
So, anyway, he's still down there on Pensacola. I heard on the beach. Good.
And Ken said that day we all went over and visited with Ken. Ken said he had, I don't know how long ago it was, but he went over to Tony's house to visit him. He wouldn't even come to the door.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Ken don't get out much.
Took care of himself the way he did, and, you know, he was always in great shape and everything. So, you know, Don Curtis was the same way. He was always in great physical shape.
Yeah.
That stuff gets a hold of you. It doesn't let go.
Yeah, that's true. Works on my dad, but he's 102 now, so it's just... It's about time, you know, things start happening from old age, I guess. And I hope it don't run in the family too much, because I never could remember it much myself. I didn't have a good memory.
you already got a head start. You were crazy to begin with, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have an excuse.
Yeah. That's true. Somebody told me about it a long time ago and said, you need to grow up. I said, what for? You know,
that's
I was having
I
fun.
I tell people all the time, getting older, I don't have any option, but I refuse to grow up.
That's me too. Somebody said to me the other day.
Go ahead, sir.
At the casino there, when I was driving the shuttle, some old women on there, so I was telling them about, it was yesterday. And they said, well, the day senior day, you get, you know, buffet half price, and they have drawings and all that. And this woman says, well, you know, there is some benefits to being old. And I said, I don't know. I think the other ones do it by far. Because the older you get, the worse things get.
Well, we got another caller I'm going to get online because I know he's worked with some world champions. I think he refereed Doc Hackenschmidt, too. So let me get him on the line with us. Papa Smith.
Good evening, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Hey, tell us about wrestling the Frank Gotts and George Hackenschmidt match. I know you did.
I got something to tell you, gentlemen. I've been in White Cross, Georgia. Briscoe was a Florida heavyweight champion, and Bob Michael was a Georgia heavyweight champion. And they were going to, whoever lost would be the champion of both states. So Bob Michael came to the ring. I was refereeing. And of course, they go on an hour Broadway. And Spotlight had that old strap Georgia championship, wrestling heavyweight champion. It looked like crap. It was the hardest piece of crap I ever seen in my life. Half the stuff was missing off of it and everything. And here come Frisco in the ring with that real good-looking Florida championship belt and everything. Pop Wiggle took his off and just stood and told him that you could have it. Yeah, they had a real, you know, they had a real nice belt down in Florida. So Junker wouldn't never buy a new belt for nothing. They didn't fifth place this one.
Okay, so that belt, the belt that Bristol had at the time, that was a multi-week belt. He made the best belt, in my opinion. I always liked his belt.
And another time down in Savannah, Billy was the champion then. And he asked me, so did I borrow your car? I said, yeah. And so about 1 o'clock in the morning, I look out the door and I would get my car there. My car wasn't there. I looked down the walkway there, and I see the belt and a bag laying out there in the middle of the aisle. So I walk down there, and I pick it up, and I knock on the door. I said, Dory, Dory. Some guy opened the door and said, ain't no Dory live here. So, and that was the old town motel. I'm glad that you ain't talk.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, they could tell a lot of stories.
Whew.
And the next morning, when, it was about 11 o'clock, Briscoe come down and I'm like, Briscoe, they were coming down the room. He said, down there. He said, I'm in deep shit. He said, that was going to be raising all kind of hell. I said, what's wrong? He said, I lost the belt. I lost my bag, too. I said, man, you really must have got high. He said, I don't know where I was at. And I said, oh, now we're behind my bed. I pulled it out. I said, here it is. It's let out in the middle of the aisle. It's lucky somebody didn't get it, you know, before I did. I said, probably would have killed everybody in Georgia. But the worst, I refereed a match between him and Buddy Tote one night in Savannah, no, in Augusta. They went an hour Broadway. Did nobody get hurt. Then in the match, Homo Dale jumps in the ring and busts the door open and hit him accidentally. But from the hard way with his elbow.
Oh, jeez.
Dory said, I can't believe this. Wrestle an hour Broadway. He jumped in the ring, hit me with his elbow and bust me open. You know, the first champion I remember was Wild Bill Lawson. No, I see him.
To him.
At the auditorium in Atlanta.
I met Bill Lawson. He's a nice man.
Yeah. Oh, he will.
Charlie refereed when Jacob put the angel over.
Just that. I've been afraid of a lot of wrestling matches, gentlemen, I'll tell you that. And I guess you have too, Bobby. Jerry wrestled a lot of them.
Charlie, do you remember what kind of worker Bill Longston was?
Do what, Jerry?
Do you remember what kind of worker he was?
He was a good worker, I thought. When he left-handed, Jerry.
Do what?
When he left-handed.
I have no idea, Charlie. He was always in St. Louis, and that's where I met him. He was a prince of a fella. Nice
he
man.
Part of his office. He owned part of the St. Louis office at one time.
He was a good man.
Well, you know, a lot of his champions were good, you know. Like you say a while ago, Botwinkle would have made a good champion. I tell you, somebody else would have made a good champion, gentlemen. That's
Ooh.
Been Doc Curtis.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, he would have. Would have.
I think Doc Curtis would have made a good champion.
Yeah.
Well, he was pretty salty.
There ain't no doubt about that.
Well, I've seen him in action before. Coming from Augusta, Georgia. So y'all know the first place that Bob McLean ever turned heel? First place he ever been at was the hill?
Here.
Georgia, right.
Yeah.
It's the first place he ever was healed.
You know the first place Bobby Shane was a heel?
Mobile.
Mobile,
Alabama, yeah.
Boy, he got over like a champion too, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And,
boy.
Never wrestled on television. And only wrestled there about let's see, he first came in 71, made his last appearance in the Mobile area about a month before he died, so that'd be 4 years. Wrestled there probably 2 dozen times in 4 years. And we're still.
They told the people, you won't see me wrestle on TV. If you want to see me wrestle, you have to come to this house.
You got to pay money. Yep.
Who was he working with, Mike?
Well, when he first came in, he had a little program with Dick Dunn. And then he and Kelly did a thing. And then he and Lucas worked against each other. Then they came, Jim and Terry Garvin, together and had Jim Garvin managing them. And then he did the thing with Lee where he slapped Lee on TV. And then he had a program with Lee, but they stretched that out. They only had 3 matches in 4 months. They stretched it out because Bobby wasn't working there full time. He would be, you know, he was working in Tampa, but he would come up and do shots, you know, every other week or so. And they had a deal. He was supposed to come back in December. And Jerry, you were there in 71, wasn't it? Wasn't it 71 when you were there?
I think so.
I don't know if you were still there or not. Were you there still at Christmas time?
No.
Yeah, you had just left, man. They had a big Christmas card, and Shane was supposed to come in and work team with Prince Pullins to work against Bob Kelly and Mike Boyette. And he called Lee and said, "I'm not coming unless I get, you know, a bigger percentage of the house." And Lee said, "You know, okay." he quit every ticket on sale, every seat in the house was $1. And Rob Shane found out about it, no show. But he came back a couple times after that. He came back in 73 and he came back in 75 just as he got right after he came back from Australia and before he was killed. He was in Mobile a month before he was killed. Worked against Terry Latham. But yeah, he was he proved there he could work as a heel, and then he went to Florida and then to Georgia with that, because gangbusters. there was another one whose name was bounced around and supposedly was going to get the world championship. But in my opinion, as good as he was, I don't think he wasn't big enough, number one, to be the world champion. But I have no doubt that he would have made a great booker or promoter, because he had a great mind for the business, from what I understand.
He was stiff as a board, I know that.
Jerry. What? You know, you were talking a while ago about somebody hunting Billy Spears.
Yeah.
Somebody tell me to find him, I'd find him.
I know you'd find him.
I always found Jerry Oaks down in Savannah, didn't I?
Every time I look up, it's Charlie Smith. Ernesto put you up there. Ernesto put you up with that. Thanks, stupid.
So you already made your annual trip to Panama City this year?
We're living in Saturday, sir.
Okay.
Tomorrow is my wife's birthday, gentlemen.
Happy birthday.
She's a little bit younger than me.
She'll be 29 again.
Yes, sir.
Everybody's younger than you, Sean.
I know it.
Hell. While you're down there, go through Pensacola and check on Bill Bowman for me.
Yeah, I've been trying to call since the phone didn't put nothing back up yet. But it had no.
Yeah.
I think it will at the first of the month, sir. I hope it will, because I miss talking to Bill, you know?
I do too. Talk to him just about every day, and it's been a few weeks now.
Are you coming south, sir, when you leave New York?
I don't know where I'm going. Maybe going to Connecticut, I don't know. Or not Connecticut, I got an email today. It wasn't for me, but they were saying where they shipped some tickets. And I didn't think it was a state we were going to, but somebody's going there, but it may be Tom Ernesto, because he's leaving ahead of me. And Dundee's going to New Jersey. He leaves tomorrow. Ron's in Virginia. So I'm hoping, since Ron's already started south, and hopefully I will. Delaware. Some stops in Delaware. I'm hoping I don't go to Delaware, but that's...
Is that in the United States?
Wherever they send me, I'll be happy. What's that?
Is that in the United States?
Yeah. It is.
Oh, okay.
How far out west do y'all go, Mike?
New Orleans. That's as far west as we go. Circus kind of is like the wrestling business used to be. Each circus has its own territory.
Oh, okay.
And but they will infringe if they find out where you're going. That's one of the reasons that we don't publish where we're going so far out in advance. We don't want other circuses, you know, hitting a town or hitting, you know, two towns over from where we are a week or so ahead of us, or the same week or something like that. They try.
How many of them are out there?
Oh, there's probably 15, 20. None of them as large as we are. But yeah, there's all kind of little.
Do y'all consider them outlaws?
Yeah, I do. I don't.
I mean, you work for the office, right? I just wondered. That was.
Hey, I had only so hot at me one time. He said they didn't have no opposition wrestling in Georgia. I said, you're full of crap. He got mad. He wanted to fight me. They've had outlaw wrestling here since like the day one.
Oh, yeah.
They ran towns more regular than we ran towns.
Yeah, I know it. Mm. Y'all heard about Roddy Guthrie, hadn't
Yeah.
I heard he was in a car wreck.
Yeah.
Is he any relation to the other Ronnie Gossett, the one that was up in Tennessee?
No, no.
He just using the name or what?
Say, pardon?
He just using that name?
You know, I think that might be his real name, isn't it?
Really? I don't know.
You know, the one up in Nashville, Chattanooga, where he was, that Ronnie Gossett up there, you know, he's dead now.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I never met that guy. But, son, I would love to have met him. Because he sold Nick's office to an attorney. Attorney thought he bought the Nashville territory, paid Ronnie Gossett a bunch of money. And Nick didn't know nothing. Of course, Nick didn't know nothing about it. But they said, now Jimmy, I think Jimmy Powell's one told me this story, said when they finally hashed out what had happened and he got all that money, of course, he done spent the money. He didn't have the money. So they arrested him, and they said he was down at the jail about 4 hours and said he knew something on the sheriff and threatened to tell, and they turned him loose. And he never went to court on it. Never. I mean, he just got away with it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know the Ronnie Gossett y'all are talking about then.
Oh, God, you don't know Ronnie
Gossett?
Ronnie P.
Gossett?
The big
heavy one?
Yeah.
He's dead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's this other one? Yeah. I don't know him.
That other guy's he's real, real shitty, Jerry. He'll fuck around and fuck have so-and-so going to be there and all that. They don't do it. And he'll cancel on a lot of shows. And everything. And they locked him up in South Carolina for doing all that. And he spent about a month in jail up in Greenville, somewhere up in there, about false advertisement.
I don't know him, I don't think. I knew the other one.
Oh.
Speaking of shady characters in the Carolinas, anybody heard from Randall Brown lately? How he's doing?
I talked to him the other day.
How's he doing?
And, he said he was doing all right. But, you know, he feels bad every time I talk to him. But, you know, his foot's caused him a lot of problems, you know. He got that diabetes. And, they cut part of his toes off and everything. That's right, man. He hadn't been to Mobile last 2 years, has he?
No. Let me tell you a story about my buddy Randall Brown. I get an email from him about a month ago, and he's just saying, "Hey, man, I ain't talked to you in a while." He said, "I'm getting better." He had evidently had some memory issues, and they had figured out that he had some issues with his blood, and they had that straightened out, and he was getting well. Michael, you remember 4 or 5, maybe longer, when they had that belt buckle down there that they that was a door prize at Mobile, that great big nice belt buckle. Had the wrestlers on it, sort of looked like a championship belt, but it was just a belt buckle.
Real nice.
He won the door prize. He won it.
Yeah.
And that day he won it, I went over and I told him, I said, "You rascal." I said, I wanted that. And we just laughed it off. But in the email, he said, "Look, this thing's still in the box that I wanted in." He said, "I'm never going to wear it." And he said, "I remember you said you liked it." He said, "I'm going to send it to you." And I'll be darned if 2 days later in my mailbox, I didn't get that belt buckle.
Uh-huh.
So I have got it back here in the drawer. I don't know that I'll ever wear it out, lay anywhere other than maybe the Mobile or something. But my buddy Randall Brown thought enough of me to send that belt buckle, so I just he told me he sent me a note when he sent it. He said, "This don't mean we're engaged." He said, "It don't mean we're going steady." He said, "It's just from one brother to another." And I went, "Thank you."
Well, I'm glad he hadn't lost his sense of humor.
No, he's funny.
He's a funny fella. When the reunion, Don Fields came in with the belt buckle. That thing was so large. And he says, "Hey, like my belt buckle, Joe." I said, "Well, where you got it, Dad? It kind of looks more like a tombstone to me." Charlie, did you get that email I sent you with the Cole Brothers logo on it?
Yeah, I'm trying to tell you to call me, but they want $50 each. They said them have 10 or 10 bells. I mean, 10 bell bundles.
So in order to get it for $50 each, we got to order 10 of them?
10, yeah.
Well, I don't know if I can come up with $500. I don't know if I can get enough guys to invest in it, but I'll ask them.
Yeah.
Well, what will they charge to make just one? Mr. Wheeler Taylor.
Out of the world, sir. It's over $500.
You've got enough connections. You ought to be able to get me there for about $10.
Well, it's worth, you know what they paid for them in Mobile?
Okay.
I had paid for it. They made a couple of dollars off each one they sold, you know?
Yeah.
I think they paid about $8 a piece for them.
All right, well, I'll ask around and see who may want one. If I can get 15, 20 people up, we'll see if we can get a price breakdown.
I know.
How much are you charging, though? How much of that's going in your pocket, Mr. Personnel?
Hey, you can talk. I'll let you talk to the man yourself, sir.
Smith Novelty gets a kickback. That's the way they do business.
I was
going to say. Send whatever you got to Renegade T-Shirt Company. Let's see what kind of deal we can get.
Let me plug in the Renegade T-Shirt Company. I told them, I told you up at Padre, I was going to sue y'all for getting all this free advertising on the internet. I never said that about Smith Novelty Company. It's always Renegade T-Shirt Company.
Well, you haven't told Charlie the latest, have you? We got a new investor in Renegade. Louise Smith is now a minority owner.
Oh, my gosh. I just scored my wife into that.
Poor Melody. Yeah, she knew the board of directors of Smith Novelty. She said couldn't trust them.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're going to pick a lot of places. Sit there with Bobby's, watch him. Don't know all them people come by. That's what fails. What's the SB man, Bobby?
The what?
The SB man.
Oh, Supertramp.
Yeah, the SB. Supertramp.
Yeah.
You ever met him, Jerry?
No.
Well, he's never been out of Vegas.
You ain't missed nothing. Look, they had a wrestling match out there this year. Well, let me rephrase that. They had some people. They called it a wrestling match. And the second or third, I made it through the first match and made it through the second match. Third match come out and they said that they had their world heavyweight champion was going to be in the next match. And this cat come out there, buddy, and if he weighed 185, son, I'm a rocket scientist. And he was the world champion. I turned around, and Butcher Vachon was sitting there at his gimmick table behind me. And I turned around, started out, and I said, Paul, I said, if he tries to use a hangman hold, I said, please do a run-in and come get me. But I'm headed to the buffet. Oh.
Well, the... back to a little bit about the NWA. They've recently gone through
a lawsuit.
Bruce Tharp has been awarded the rights to the name. I guess is, I'm not sure what all he's gotten the rights to, but he is now the owner operator of the National. What's left of the National Wrestling Alliance.
You met him, Bobby, didn't you?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's been to Mobile a couple times. Well, Jerry, you probably remember his dad. His dad, Chet Tharp, was the ring announcer. Was it Miami? Maybe one of the Florida cities down there.
What was his name?
Chet Tharp.
I have no idea, but I got news from them. There is no NWA anymore.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what he bought. Or won.
Yeah.
Hey, like Georgia Championship Wrestling. Maybe I would have bought that, didn't he?
You know my...
Who did?
Yeah, I think Brady did buy that.
Brady Odom.
Good for Grady.
Well, you know, the thing I've never understood about this National Wrestling Alliance thing, you know, the National Wrestling Alliance was a conglomeration or an organization of promoters, quote-unquote, for the betterment of the wrestling business. It was an association of promoters to swap talent and further enhance and all that BS that they had to put in there to make it not a monopoly. But I never understood where these people that say they owned it or had it, I never understood how they wound up with it.
I don't either, Bobby.
You know, because all the promoters that made it up, none of them are promoting anymore.
That's it.
Like you said,
I don't know how that ever happened either. What's that, Charlie?
That attorney's got it now, hadn't he?
Yeah, Bruce Carter, he won it because he sued that guy out of Charlotte. Because the guy that had it in Charlotte, he was claiming you could... If you joined the National Wrestling Alliance, that you were covered by a blanket insurance policy, and all that was a ruse, because you can't do that. I mean, there's no way to do it. I mean, the cost of that would be astronomical. And Tharp, being an attorney, he found something in the fine print that said it was only good for up to 50 people or something. And he sued the guy, and he wanted the guy to produce financial records and all that stuff, and the guy didn't show up, so the court was fining him something like $1,000 a day or
until
he produced, and the guy finally settled out of court by saying, okay, I'll just relinquish all rights to it. Here, you can have it.
Who are you saying that had it?
Some guy in Charlotte.
Yeah. Guy in Charlotte. I don't know his name.
I don't either, but I've heard of him.
Well, I don't know how he wound up with it. There was some guy in Vegas, they say he used to be the president of the National Wrestling Alliance. I didn't know who he was. I mean, Goggle was sitting there behind me, and if he'd have said Goggle, I'd knew about that. But, you know.
Well, that's like me saying I went to the moon. You can't prove I did, and you can't prove I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Morons.
I think you ought to get you some T-shirts made up. I went to the moon.
I might have better luck with them.
No, I was shot out of a cannon. The coal for the circus.
There you go. That'll work.
Yeah.
I survived the cannon launch.
Yes, put a picture of a cannon with me coming out the end of it. That'd look good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd probably Photoshop that.
If they shot Charlie out of that cannon and had to put a diaper on him. Charlie'd never make it up to climb up to the top of that cannon or slide down inside of it.
Well, I was fixing to say, back in the day, if they'd have shot Charlie out of that cannon, he was so little he'd have went through the opening in the net.
I heard that.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't have no problem hitting the net now.
Yeah. Guys,
right.
I hate to cut out on y'all, but I'm about to cut out.
All right, Joe, we'll appreciate you calling in.
Well, let me tell you one of my jokes.
Okay.
The Obamas went over to the Clintons' house. And while I was over there, I was drinking a few beers, so Obama had to go to the bathroom. So he went in there and took a leak and come out and told Michelle, he says, you know what? They got a gold urinal in there. And that's the prettiest thing. He says, I've never seen one like it before, and if I ever build a house, another house, I want one just like it in there. She said, okay. So they finished it there, and so Hillary, by herself, walked in the door when they was leaving. And she said, well, we really enjoyed this here visit and everything. We'll have to do it again sometime. It was fun. And Obama turned around and he said, well, I just got to tell you something. That urinal, that gold urinal you got in the bathroom, that's the prettiest thing I ever seen. He said, I love it so much that if I build another house, I'm going to put one in there just like it. She said, okay. So he left. She shut the door. She went back in the kitchen and said, Bill, I found out who peed in your saxophone.
I love it.
Yeah. Guys, I'll talk to y'all later here.
Good night, Joe. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Charlie,
you got anything else to allow? Otherwise, I'm gonna start wrapping it up.
I'm gonna leave too. Thank you, gentlemen. I've enjoyed it.
I'm sorry about your brother-in-law, too. I didn't know nothing about it until, you know, Rob, and I like Rob, you know, he was a good guy. You know, talking about what's the guy's name over in Statesboro, so the announcer, Ray Klassen. Yes, Ray Klassen. Yeah, Ray Klassen. Yeah, that's the first time I heard of him in 20 years the other day.
I didn't know he was still living.
He's 81 or 82, his daughter told me.
Well, that's the same age as me.
I know.
But I better look at him.
You have always been better looking.
Oh, yeah, now wait, now that brings, let me throw something in right there. You know, people are always asking about old cards, who was this person or who was that person. Ray Klassen used to work under a hood some.
I know he did.
Yeah. He sure did.
I can't remember what El Diablo, maybe? I can't remember. He worked under a hood some. He worked around South Georgia for years. Yeah.
Right. He'd run outlaw shows.
Oh, yes, sir. He'd run outlaw shows. What's that guy's name that everybody's worked for? It run all of South Georgia.
Van Fleet. That's Jerry's favorite promoter. Jerry would be in heaven if Van Fleet promoted a show and Jerry could work with the McGuire twins, he'd be in heaven.
This is a whole new show we could do. If we could get Van Fleet and Ray Klassen, Hall Strickland, Grady O, all these guys that, you know, that only said there wasn't no outlaw shows in Georgia. We could do a whole show.
Brad Bennett will work for him too, you know it.
Who?
Brad Bennett.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Burhead did.
Yeah, he worked for him. Van Fleet.
Tomorrow is Burhead Bennett or Gene Bennett as we know him. Tomorrow is his mom. No, Saturday is his mom's birthday.
His birthday.
Should be what, 90,
93, 95,
94? 95. 99.
Yo.
Goodness.
She's up there. And,
He picked her up with Joe's dad.
I heard that.
He probably listened in to y'all, too, talking about his mother.
She must have had Gene when she was about 17, 18, because Gene's about 75, ain't he?
Yeah. He's old. And then he got a boot tap out of his house here, and you was going up there about it.
Well, I talked to his wife on the internet today. She said he was in Alabama to come on up.
Oh, God. Well, gentlemen, I enjoyed being. Y'all, thanks for letting me in there, buddy.
See you later, Charlie.
All right, Charlie.
All right.
Call me tomorrow, sir, before you leave on vacation.
All right, sir.
All right.
Bye-bye. Later. Bye.
Bye.
Like jumping out of the frying pan, going in the fire. He's leaving Georgia, going to Panama City. He may turn around and come home. Hit for cooler weather in Atlanta.
He has been going down the last week of July, first week of August, for as long as I've known him, and I've known Charlie for 40 years more, and he takes his whole family. He takes his son, his daughter, their husband, wife. He takes their children, their grandchildren. He takes the whole family for a week down there. They've been doing it for years.
Yeah,
I tell him every year he could adopt me if he wanted to, you know, as long as he got me my own place at a separate hotel.
Way away.
Referee,
he refereed for Leader Rocky whenever he was down there, whenever he'd come down in the 70s.
Yeah. He'd always catch Dothan on Friday night most of the time.
Yeah.
And then he'd work Panama City some on Sundays, I think.
Well, guys, we are going to take next week off because I'm going to be traveling. I'll leave here next Thursday, hopefully. I know where I'm going. Otherwise, I'll get in my car and head south.
Well, you be careful wherever you're going.
I will. Bobby, you're going to be gone the week after that?
I'll be here the week after. It's 3 weeks away for when I'll be gone.
Oh, so you're not going to play the postseason game?
It's not till the 9th. Next week's the what? The 20-something, and the next week's the...
Yeah.
So I'll the 2nd or something. Yeah, I'll be here for that one. When is Scott supposed to bring the special guest?
That's 3 weeks. That's going to be the 9th. That's 2 weeks.
That's the week I'm gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're taking the 2nd off, and then we'll be back on the 9th, and our guest will be Scott to deal with a special guest that he won't tell us who it's going to be. And I'm trying to line up some other stuff. Bo James sent me a text today letting me know that Tom Pritchard wants to do the show. So I'm going to try and line that up sometime
in
August.
Back up a minute, Mr. Host. Let's make sure we got our dates right. We're taking next week off, which is the
27th. No.
Yeah.
Next week is the 2nd of August.
No.
Yes, sir. Today's the 26th of July.
I guess it is. Okay, I got my days wrong.
Yeah.
It's the heat.
We're taking the 2nd off, and we'll be back on the 9th. It'll just be Jerry and I and Scott and whoever our special guest is.
That's right. So I'll be. Okay. I got my days right. I'm sorry.
So the 9th and the
16th heat's getting me.
Will be with us, right?
Do I now?
The 9th and the 16th will be with
you. 9th and 16th, I'll be gone.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm trying to line up some other people. I've been talking through Tom Burke with Fred Curry, trying to get Fred Curry on with us, and also Smith Hart, the Hart family. So.
I shot an email, speaking of future guests, and I believe he'll do our show. I shot an email today, and I'm waiting to hear back from him. But Mick Karch, have you ever met Mick?
Oh, yeah.
Mick did the, you know, he,
I know
he,
Mick.
You know, he used to do the commentary for Gagne and up in that Minnesota area.
Right.
I sent him an email today to see if he'd join us one Thursday night. So.
He and George Shire are big butts. So, maybe have two of them on together.
I guess he'll come. Bad as I ribbed him in Las Vegas, he may not. Brian Green told me, he said, see, Mick, when you get out there, he's going to send me something, and it's very important that I get it. And I went, okay. So Mick, he does a lot of tour stuff out there, and he goes out and sees different stuff. So we never hooked up. So the night of the banquet, we're sitting there, and Mick hollers at me, and he goes, Bobby, make sure you see me before you go. I got to give you something. I said, okay. And what he wound up giving me was an autographed picture of himself. And I just made this big, I was screaming. I said, you got to be kidding. I said, I've been trying to catch up with you for 3 days for this? It was like, we're not that close. He didn't know what if I was being serious or not. I'm like, I can't believe it. I said, I thought you had a shoot tape with Gotch or something, the way Bodie was talking. I said, I didn't know it was this.
Oh, man. Well, I hate Michael Elliott wasn't able to join us because I guess he got tired of the work. I will definitely try and get him on in the future to talk about his DVD and everything. And my buddy Bo James, I want to get Bo back on with us at some point. He's been so busy. He's been traveling so much. I think about getting him a job with the circus so he won't have to travel so much.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. He had a birthday recently, a couple weeks ago, and I told him I owed his wife a birthday kiss because I certainly wasn't going to waste one on him.
I heard that.
If you listen, Bo, you know it was a rib, but you know I wouldn't do you that way.
I would.
Bobby Simmons on the other hand.
Yeah, I would. I don't make no, you know, I'm just trying to be a nice guy.
Well, guys, it's been fun as always, and we'll do this again in a couple weeks. And Jerry, get out there and find that coyote now.
I will. I'll bring him on air.
Yeah, I'm gonna start looking at the internet to see if I can see any Acme products, you know, that are dropped on any animals down there, and
it'll be me, believe me. Y'all have fun. Be safe, guys.
All right, guys.
All right,
good
guys.
Night, everybody.
Talk to you later. Good night. Bye bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.